This is a podcast from WILL AM 580. To support our station, please visit www.willpledge.org. That's www.willpledge.org.
This is the AM 580 News Daily Podcast for Monday, April 21st. I'm Tom Rogers. Coming up, Legal Issues in the News explores the aftermath of the Supreme Court decision on whether lethal injection is considered cruel and unusual punishment. We'll also get a forecast for the week ahead from Mike Sola, first to look at today's news. The series of aftershocks from Friday's earthquake in southeast Illinois continued early this morning. The U.S. Geological Survey recorded one of the strongest aftershocks at around 1240, a 4.5 magnitude quake that was centered in the same area as Friday's original quake in Edwards County. There's no report of damage anywhere from this aftershock, the latest of about 15 since Friday morning's 5.2 magnitude quake that caused some minor damage. Jim Edgar says he remembers state politics getting ugly during the administrations of Dan Walker and more recently George Ryan, but the former Illinois governor says he's never seen it as bad as it is right now. AM 580's Jim Meadows reports.
Edgar says there's little progress being made towards a state budget. Downstate Illinois is being neglected. Morale among state workers is low. And Governor Blagojevich and the Democratic legislative leaders are too tied up in political feuding to do what has to be done. The former governor told the Illinois News Broadcasters Convention in Springfield over the weekend that he fears any progress will have to wait until after Blagojevich leaves office. And he says the next governor will have to make hard decisions to fix the state's finances, like the ones he made as governor in the early 1990s.
I had to spend a lot of time saying no. I think the first thing, we got to make sure the next governor understands the word no. And not only you tell no to the legislature, you tell no to other people, you tell no to yourself.
But Edgar says he worries that public confidence in state government may have fallen so low by then that the new governor will have trouble rallying support for the spending cuts and tax increases he believes may be necessary. I'm Jim Meadows, AM 580 News.
Illinois legislators are saying not so fast to the governor's plan to consolidate portions of some state agencies. Last week, the Illinois Senate officially rejected the plan that would have combined certain administrative functions, such as accounting and payroll, for the Departments of Public Health, Veterans Affairs, and Health Care and Family Services. The administration argued it would save money and allow for better efficiency, but unions representing state workers were concerned that it could lead to job cuts. John Cameron of AFSCME questioned if the consolidation would accomplish its stated goal.
Proposals to streamline, change, or alter the government have not manifested themselves in any way near what they were promised to do. And in fact, the experience is more and more bureaucratic mess.
The governor issued an executive order earlier in the week that outlined the changes, but the Senate's action prevents it from taking effect. Meanwhile, the Illinois House has moved ahead with a measure that would track domestic abusers with GPS monitoring devices. As Jenna Dooley reports, the idea came after the murder of an Elmhurst woman last month.
The GPS bracelets would be given to people who violate restraining orders. 43-year-old Cindy Bischoff of Arlington Heights had an order of protection against former boyfriend Michael Giroux. Authorities say he continued to target her and her family after she broke off the relationship and ultimately killed Bischoff on March 7th after she left work. He then committed suicide. The victim's brother Michael says his sister thought up the legislation during the months she was being stalked.
Cindy did everything she could within the context of the law to keep Michael Giroux off the streets and away from her, staying at four different homes and several different hotels. But the law, as we currently know it, was not enough to save her.
The device would send a signal to police if the aggressor comes too close to the victim. GPS tracking is already used in Illinois for some sexual predators. I'm Jenna Dooley.
Democratic presidential candidate Hillary Clinton has opened a new Terre Haute campaign headquarters, 8 days after a fire destroyed her former office there. The new headquarters fill with about 25 volunteers over the weekend preparing to canvass the community with literature in support of the New York senator. Terre Haute realtor and Clinton supporter Mike Ofsansky found the office space for her. The April 11th fire remains under investigation, but investigators have ruled out arson. A longtime political analyst and writer is planning his next step, and Southern Illinois University will soon have to fill another executive post. Paul Simon Public Policy Institute Director Mike Lawrence says he'll retire in November.
I have chosen to leave whatever positions I'm in when I still have 100% enthusiasm for what I'm doing. I never want to be in a position when I have less than 100%. And so I think this is a good time to move on for a lot of reasons.
Lauren says he's pleased to leave the Institute in the condition it's in, and he fully expects to reach a $10 million goal for endowments by the time he leaves this fall. The former reporter, columnist, and political analyst came to the Public Policy Institute in 1997 and became its director after former Senator Paul Simon died in 2003. Lauren says he hopes to continue being a part of crafting public policy and wants to resume his writing on state issues. A wedding gift takes one of the center stages today at Springfield's Abraham Lincoln Presidential Library and Museum. A coffee urn that's been in the family of Springfield attorney Christopher Brown was a wedding gift from Abraham and Mary Todd Lincoln, one year before Lincoln won the presidency. Lincoln had administered Brown's bar exam. James Cornelius is the museum's curator, and he's thrilled that one of Brown's descendants decided to give the urn to the public.
Both the existence of the new presidential museum and what a hit it's been with the public, and the approaching bicentennial of Lincoln's birth next year is causing a fair number of people to take note of either their own associations or things they may have had in the way of items like this.
Cornelius says the coffee urn was made at a time when the silver plating process was just becoming popular with middle-class 19th century households like the Lincolns. He says it needed only light cleaning and a coat of wax, even though Brown's family used the urn at parties for more than a century. For the latest newscast online, go to will.illinois.edu/news. This is the AM 580 News Daily Podcast. I'm Tom Rogers. The Supreme Court decided last week that lethal injection passes constitutional muster, specifically finding that Kentucky's process of causing death was not cruel and unusual punishment. The decision is even more detailed than the Illinois lethal injection statute. Commentator Amy Guidup explains in this week's edition of Legal Issues in the News.
There's an Illinois appellate court case from about 20 years ago that decides a death penalty issue, something about lethal injection. It's not a ruling about the constitutionality of the death penalty. It doesn't focus a bit on any argument regarding cruel and unusual punishment. Instead, the case is about the public's right to know about the process of lethal injection, the process of the execution of a person found not fit to live among us. Yes, the court ruled, a man who wanted to learn about the drugs involved in an execution in Illinois, the dosage and the rate of administration, could learn at least some of that. It's not clear from the opinion exactly what the state wanted held back, but the court found that the man's questions had to be answered at least in part, and that bureaucratic arguments that the information wasn't yet ready to go public weren't valid. The United States Supreme Court focused on that same sort of information, the process, when it decided the lethal injection case last week, finding that lethal injection is not cruel and unusual punishment. The justices in dissent joined the majority in writing some pretty horrifying stuff, really, like the fact that in some states, someone in the death chamber touches the eyelashes of the condemned when they believe he's sedated, because should his eyelids flutter, he needs more of the sedative or else he'll feel excruciating pain from the chemicals that come next in the process of killing. It's not clear whether that sort of information, the eyelashes test, found its way into the hands of the Illinois man who wanted certain lethal injection information from the state 20 years ago, likely so he could make the same sorts of arguments about cruel and unusual punishment that the Supreme Court found lacking last week. But there's enough detail within the single statute regarding lethal injection in Illinois to answer at least some of those questions. The law is titled somewhat innocuously, Execution of Sentence, and as of last week, when the Supreme Court upheld Kentucky's lethal injection statute, it probably passes constitutional muster. That's because the Supreme Court had to get into the nitty-gritty of lethal injection in deciding it's constitutional for states to take lives that way. In Illinois, for example, the executioner, that's the precise term in the statute, uses an intravenous administration of a lethal quantity of an ultra-short-acting barbiturate in combination with a chemical paralytic agent and potassium chloride or other equally effective substances sufficient to cause death. In Kentucky, the statute is less specific. But the court noted and upheld the state-specific mix, similar to that used in Illinois, in its opinion. The first drug, the court explained, is a fast-acting barbiturate sedative that induces a deep coma-like unconsciousness, while the second drug inhibits all muscular skeletal movements and paralyzes the diaphragm. The third induces cardiac arrest. Why is this review so important now, after the Supreme Court upheld its constitutionality? Here's what the Illinois Appellate Court wrote in the Freedom of Information Act case from 20 years ago. Information about lethal injection is precisely the type of information that enables people to fulfill their duties of discussing public issues, make informed political judgments, and monitor the government to ensure that it is being conducted in the public interest. And that's true even in a state that's currently under a death penalty moratorium. I'm Amy Guida.
Amy Guida is an assistant professor of journalism and law at the University of Illinois. Aside from a few clouds moving into parts of the two-state area this afternoon, we'll see a mostly sunny day with a high temperature somewhere between 70 in northeast Indiana to near 80 in western Illinois. Look for a high today in Champaign-Urbana of about 76. Clear to partly cloudy tonight with some areas of patchy fog and lows from 50 in eastern Indiana to near 60 in western Illinois, 55 in Champaign-Urbana. And for tomorrow, becoming mostly cloudy with scattered showers and thunderstorms arriving. We'll still see some sunshine, though, in Indiana. Highs ranging tomorrow from 68 in northwest Illinois to near 80 in far southern Illinois. 76 degrees, the forecast for Champaign-Urbana, with some storms possibly developing in the afternoon. Wednesday's outlook, intervals of clouds and sunshine again, and a high of a very pleasant 75 degrees. This has been the AM 580 News Daily Podcast for Monday, April 21st. You can find podcasts of Focus 580, The Afternoon Magazine, Agricultural Programming, and other helpful information on our website, will.illinois.edu. I'm Tom Rogers, AM 580 News.